Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, can superheroes teach us some important lessons about how to respond to a crisis? Can they tell us about our culture and our psychology as a human race? Those are some of the questions Katie Cox, PhD candidate at the Australian National University, has posed in a paper given at the Literary Studies Convention just held this week in Canberra. It's an interesting problem. Katie Cox says she looked to superheroes because in the real world, we now live with a constant sense of turmoil and imminent crisis. And in the superhero world, that's happening all the time. Her doctoral project is looking at the Iron Man franchise in particular from the Marvel Universe. I spoke with Katie Cox.
You know, if you look at the news every day, there's always a new crisis. There's this sense that there's always something going wrong in the world, and the solutions are never easy. And so superhero fantasy is really interesting because on one level, it's you can look at it as escapism. You know, it's a retreat to a world where heroic, exceptional, and trustworthy individuals can actually intervene and save the day. But on the other hand, it never really works out quite so easily for the superheroes either, because even when everything goes exactly according to plan, their only real reward is to jump right into another crisis. And sometimes their crises compound. So what we see in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for instance, so that's the big franchise at the moment, are storylines where heroes respond to crisis with fear, and they end up creating the next threat. So Iron Man does that in the second Avengers film, Age of Ultron. He ends up creating the film's antagonist because he's so afraid of the potential consequences of leaving the world unprotected.
Now, okay, so you've likened that to the state of the world that's existed since the War on Terror began, really, with those attacks in the United States on the 11th of September.
Yes. So, I mean, I should probably qualify. This is not a unique phenomenon to post 9/11 America. There are a couple of studies on fear and anxiety in the globe, but America specifically, that fear has been building in the world, particularly in Western societies, for some time now. But since the Cold War in particular. But with 9/11, I think 9/11 marks a turning point, particularly for America. You know, it's a strike at the homeland, and the way in which it's represented in media and film and political rhetoric is through trauma. Mm. And so I think that's changed the character of political discourse since then. Mm. And that's reflected in our popular media and in our film. The first film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Iron Man, opens in Afghanistan. Iron Man's origin in the comics is actually in the Vietnam War, but for the 2008 film, they updated it. And so they don't even specify that it's in Afghanistan. It's just somewhere in the Middle East. There's a terrorist context. And that's immediately recognizable because that's the environment that we're saturated with at the moment. And also not just in America, but America exports its culture, exports its political context, and so we're aware of them.
Well, certainly, yes. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to some degree, because Hollywood will, and you know, any culture maker will reach into the culture around them to find the artifacts that they use to make their product, their film, their story, their comic, whatever it might happen to be. It therefore touches people in a way that makes that product popular, and one then feeds the other because it gets its own economy. But I am interested in this idea that in the superhero universe that you've described, it's a never-ending thing. Do you think, are you suggesting through your research that this is a touchstone against us being afraid of, essentially, the terror has come close to home, and that it seems to us as citizens a never-ending problem?
Yes, that's very much something that I'm suggesting. So the drive of my work at the moment is that we, in our popular media, we respond to this sense of crisis fatigue, but also to the but yes, also to the anxiety and the weariness that we have with the sense that the world is in a state of permanent emergency.
There's another response, of course, and that is to escape to pure fantasy. So you'd expect to see musicals and you know, purely fantasized space operas playing out. And guess what? We can see all of those in popular movies around us.
Yeah.
But is there some level at which you're saying the world needs a Superman?
I think Superman would have a hard time, actually.
He's the best. Come on, Katie, don't be hard. He was my growing up. He was my hero.
I think there's a really important place for heroes. You know, they recur through our global narratives, our myths. They perform a really important function to us. They're really aspirational. As far as, you know, if you were to transplant Superman from the comics into this world, I think that it would have an extraordinary effect. But my concern, of course, would be, you know, our world is very complex. You know, it has political realities and impasses that the superhero world...
So Superman would have to sit down with a focus group or maybe a steering committee to decide which side to be on.
I think so. I think just aren't clear cut. And that's one of the great issues that the world has, isn't it?
Also, in the Superman days, the enemy was so simple. These days, the enemy is complicated. But, Katie, I'm also interested to come back to this question about the ongoing nature of it. Now, to contrast the world that you've just drawn in our popular culture with the world of, say, Christian theology, which is a preoccupation of this program, of course, in the world of Christian theology, there is a solution, there is a final point. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is not just a superhero, but Jesus actually takes it on himself to provide the solution, the once and once only solution for the human condition, as it were. And that's a more satisfying narrative, isn't it, than the one where there's ongoing trouble all the time and it never ends?
It's an interesting point, I think, because one of the other things that I argue that superheroes do is that in becoming weary, in becoming worn down by this narrative, they actually become more relatable. And I think that fulfills a really important function. Because it shows that even the best of us are affected by the world in which we live. And that in itself, I think, is a really redemptive message. Because you don't just see these perfect people solving problems effortlessly and then, you know, going through the motions. You see them respond in very human ways, sometimes very flawed ways, but also coming together and solving problems together. There's a very new Wolverine storyline that's just come out by Tom Taylor, he's actually a Melbourne writer. And that story I find really interesting because it shows a future where superheroes have brought about a utopia. So the project has worked, but there's one last supervillain, and Wolverine has to take on the mantle again to defeat it. And this is really interesting to me because Wolverine particularly was created as a weapon. And so Wolverine, more than any other character, really suffers from this sense of being defined by crisis and suffering. And this is a narrative, ultimately, I think, of rehabilitation. So it's about learning how to exist in a world that is also good, how to move past crisis. And to do that with a group of people who understand. And so I think it's a brilliant storyline, and I think it's it really shows the way in which the superhero genre, you know, what I've been talking about are tropes, they're conventions, but there are a lot of people within the superhero genre who are subverting those. I think this storyline is one of an example of a new story that is redemptive.
How interesting. Well, I have to ask you finally, do you have a favourite superhero?
Oh, gosh, I knew this was coming.
I didn't.
No, I just, I have a soft spot for Iron Man because I'm studying him. And like, Iron Man, most of my friends don't like Iron Man, really. he has quite an arrogant streak, but I think he's quite an interesting character. I think he makes a lot of mistakes, but he does so for good reasons, and I can relate to that. That's not like I've never made a mistake in my life.
And do any of your real world friends resemble Iron Man?
Oh, no one has a suit anywhere near as flashy.
It's all about the suit. Katie Cox, PhD researcher at the ANU. In the world of the superhero, they've always got a problem. Well, they solve the problem, then there's another problem. And even in the world of Iron Man, as I understand it, although I haven't delved into this world for a while, apparently the latest villain he's fighting is someone that he created by being fearful in the last movie, which keeps the franchise going, clever, but it also keeps the horror going. Now, a lot of our popular culture is based on the idea that the horror just keeps going, there is no end to it. I'd want to say, as a Christian, there is an end to it. That's the whole point. Your eschatology, what you think about what happens in the end, actually, has a huge implication for the way you live your life and whether you can be optimistic or whether you're just pessimistic. I think a lot of our news is driven by pessimism and has an eschatology that says, well, it's all just degenerating to nothing. The Christian would say, no. We know what happens in the end. Christ has already been victorious once and for all on behalf of everybody. And the world to come will be a world where the issues of the human condition have been dealt with. It's a far better world to come. And if that's the truth that you live by, doesn't it have an implication for the way you live your life today? Here at Open House, we'd want to say absolutely.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.